All right. Welcome back to the Bad Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Amelia.
And today we are speaking with Dan Nelken of Nelken Creative, a business that he has been running for about 5 years, I think, since 2015. He's also a creative lead at Lululemon, which he's been doing for the past few years as well. He's based in Vancouver, Canada, and he is one of the most compassionate people I've spoken to in advertising. We had a wonderful conversation. He was very open and transparent about, you know, the ups and downs of his whole journey.
Yeah, truly an incredible person and very gracious, very kind. And I know we say this about all of our episodes, but truly insightful into the amount of work and the amount of passion it takes to really get to where you want to go, especially in the creative industry. It's not easy. No one is going to sit here and tell you it is. His story is just incredible. So, we're really excited to talk to you about it and, have you listen in on our conversation with Dan.
Yep. And, keep in mind that you can, catch up with the Bad Pod online, on Instagram or Twitter. It's @the_bad_pod. At the Bad Pod on either one of those, and thebadpod.com is in the works and we'll be with you soon. But thank you for joining us today and please enjoy our conversation with the one and only Dan Nelken.
Okay, everybody ready?
Media?
Well, thanks. I forgot my microphone.
You sound great.
Yeah, yes. We can hear you. So
yeah, so my in-laws are staying at Airbnb down the street, and so they just left. That's why I needed 2 minutes to get rid of them. And so they're just two blocks down the street, and so I had my microphone and everything sorted, and I knew I'd forget something, but I'm here.
Yeah, no big deal. Yeah, our microphones actually aren't even plugged in. We just thought it was good for the aesthetic.
Yeah, man. You look very impressive.
Podcast.
Headphones not even plugged in?
No. Just
we're lip reading and we're just like going
amazing.
Right? I mean, we've been doing this for so long now.
Oh,
so
yes.
At least 2 weeks. So
it's intimidating to set up.
Zoom has a closed captioning option, so we're actually just reading your words.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm joking. It all works. We're super pro.
Awesome.
For ages.
Yeah, let's do it. It's new to me too. I've listened to a lot. But I've been asked to be on podcasts before. I haven't done it, but I think in this last year, it's coming, Amelia. In the last year, I've just started creating more content, maybe coming out of my shell. And so I think, yeah, it's I think where I'm heading, where I'm going, and I love that you guys are doing it. And I don't know. I think that's one of the biggest things. I think for creatives, we're all creating at work, but to do stuff for ourselves in our own time is huge, and good for you guys for doing it.
Right. Well, thank you for being on our podcast first. Yeah. That's awesome. We get bragging rights for that forever.
I don't know if I come with bragging rights, but yeah, we'll see.
I mean, we're going to brag either way.
In five years, I will be a huge guest.
Yeah, see? And we can say that we helped in getting you there. So
you made me.
Yeah, exactly. You're so welcome. So you're going to have to just start listening to us when we finally publish these, right? Because we haven't published any of our episodes yet. We're thinking like mid-July we're going to get them live. Yeah. So
which will be interesting. I mean, with so much going on in the world right now, what's relevant in July? I mean, I don't know, but
I mean, either way, we're learning a lot. And yeah, absolutely. With the times we're in right now, it's just incredible. Listening to how people are reacting to everything.
Yeah, it's funny. Brands and advertising just seems so insignificant compared to what's happening. It's almost, even talking about it today, I'm like, what's the point?
Everything is bad.
Everything is bad. Yeah. Right. Let's just talk about that.
We can. This is the bad podcast. So
right. You do have the right guest then, I think. Yeah, right. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Brian, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we usually start these off by just doing a kind of a quick advertising background recap, if you want to bring us up to speed with your career trajectory and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. I started out as a forklift driver. I went to it took me a while to find out I wanted to work in advertising. I was kind of meandering. I tried this and that in school, and then I was taking a radio broadcasting course, and there was a copywriting course. Seemed to come easy. I loved that. That kind of set me on this path. I didn't know very much about it. Reached out to a local ad agency. I put together a portfolio overnight and walked in there thinking they were going to sign me up. I had no idea what a portfolio was. And they told me about an ad school. It was the only one in Canada at the time. And so I, at the time, was working in a warehouse driving a forklift, saved my pennies, and then flew across the country and went to this ad school. Came back to Vancouver. That was in Toronto, the school. And I got a job back at the warehouse driving a forklift. And then I continued to work on my book, and 6 months later, I got my first agency job. It was at Cossette, which at the time was one, it probably still is, the biggest kind of ad agency network in Canada, and rose a bit through there. Some of the accounts were McDonald's. McDonald's was, I want to say, the account that made me, but I was on a week-to-week contract, and so every Friday, I would kind of wait to see if I could come back on Monday.
Oh, man.
And I did that for probably 3 months. I didn't have a partner. So I was hidden a little bit. And it's like nobody knew what I was doing. I would get thrown a bone. If a creative team was working on a project, I would work on it, but they would present the work. And so the creative director didn't know what was mine. And for a while, I think there were a couple of things I got through. One was the McDonald's account. And the writer at the time, I found out after, the creative director said, how was Dan on this project? And she didn't really say anything. And the art director sat kind of quietly. And he knew that the idea they made, it was TV, billboard, radio, print, it had come from me. And he left it open for her to say something, and she didn't. And he went back. And I think that was up to me. Like, every week I kind of had to prove myself to come back on Monday. And he went back and said to the creative director that it was essentially mine and that he would love to work with me. And that saved me. If it wasn't for that guy, I don't think I would have been back one of those Mondays. And so then they signed me to Next to Nothing. I was there for 2.5 years. And I rose pretty quickly. There was, have you guys heard of Rethink?
Yes.
Ad agency Rethink? Okay. So they had this kind of rule. It was, anything Cossette does, their worst work should still be better than the best stuff coming out of Cossette. And I guess I started to produce some things that were better. And so then I got a call from them and one other agency. It was TBWA Vancouver at the time. We had one. We don't anymore. And then I had two offers and went to TBWA. And that guy who stood up for me and went back to the creative director, he actually became my partner at Cossette. And we did very well. We were offered, it was as a team, to go to either TBWA or Rethink. He went to Rethink. I went to TBWA. Wow. And then for 2 years, I did very well there. And then that's where I started to win awards. Cossette didn't really enter awards. And I don't know, say what you want about award shows, but for a young person in the industry, I mean, that's really how I got noticed. And you start to win. And even if your friends and family don't know what the hell these award shows are, the industry does, and they notice. And, I'm conflicted by award shows. But once you start winning as an individual, you make more money, you'll get the titles. Mm-hmm. That's what we look for within the industry. I think there has to be other ways of doing it. but at least in my path, that's what happened. It really helped. And then I actually burnt out. It was around the 5-year mark. I could go into way more detail into that and how that happened. But I think as a forklift driver, you know, maybe I overcompensated a bit to be like, you know, I'm not a loser or whatever. And I just worked nonstop. Super Bowl, Christmas. I knew if other people were partying and celebrating, I'd have an advantage by working. And I loved it. But I think even when you do love something, you have to rein yourself in. And I didn't do that. So I kind of burnt out and took a little break. And then, as a freelancer, I started freelancing and I ended up getting a decent size account on my own. And so for 6 years, I formed a little studio. So I was the first one to give myself the title of creative director. Yeah. So I had that title for 6 years and formed a little studio. And I didn't ever want to build an ad agency. I just at that time didn't want to work for one, and it kind of happened. And there's a lot I loved about it. But because I didn't want to build one, that one client, once they were bought out, I no longer had anything. And then I ended up working for an animation studio. Oh, this is the shirt. Can't see it on the podcast, but I'm wearing a shirt to represent to Grumo Media. So I was a creative director for an animation studio. And then that was for 4 years. I went back to freelancing, more traditional advertising, in and out of ad agencies. And then I went into Lululemon for a while. I still do some stuff for them. I'm doing some stuff for them right now. So that was interesting going in-house, and we can talk about that later. And then I don't work for them full-time. I do some stuff for them. I consult as a creative director for brands. There's a startup in LA that I'm helping, a couple of companies up here in Vancouver. And so that I kind of oversee things. They'll hire creative teams and then they'll send me the work and I review it and provide direction. I think that brings us to today.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's so much in there that I wanted to kind of dissect a little bit. So I'll go back to like the earliest thing I noticed in your timeline there. You talked about when you had that copy class that it seemed to come easy. And I don't even know if I have a question yet, but I do know that I have witnessed. I just finished portfolio school in December I felt like I saw people forcing themselves through a program that was not coming easy to them. And I in some cases you saw a breakthrough and in some cases not so much. I wonder about like, cause it's kind of a sexy industry, advertising. Yeah. So I think it attracts people that may or may not be totally suited for it.
You know, I noticed that actually when I was in school. And I will say, I think if it comes easy to you, and when I say that it comes easy to me, I don't mean getting to great comes easy. I mean, enjoying it came easy. I meant getting something out of my brain. I think if I had 5 minutes and someone who maybe wasn't a natural had 5 minutes, my stuff would be better. But what I noticed in ad school were the people who worked harder than me had better work in the end. So, I think some of us are more creative than others. I think you have to be at least a little bit creative to get into this. But if you have a strong work ethic, then I think you'll do just fine. And I think there's different ways too of being creative. For me, I tend to like gravitate towards funny. But that's not the only way to do things. There's so many different emotions. There's so many different opportunities to be creative. You could just be really smart. You can be like more left brain, but have creative abilities and still have a place in this industry.
Right.
And you have a really interesting trajectory too, because it seems like you started out in the way that all young people in the ad industry are like salivating for, you know what I mean? It's just like, okay, I'm starting with like this amazing agency and yes, it's week to week, but you know what? I'm still there. And then I'm earning, you know, awards and I'm getting these job offers from these amazing creative agencies that have name recognition, that other people know, right? And then all of a sudden you're just like, you know what? Nah, fuck this. I'm done. You know, like I want to work for myself. And I think that's really interesting. Could you talk more about having...
I maybe made it
a year off.
Yeah.
Well, I can talk. It was kind of sad as well. Like I could get into it. I don't mind sharing. But just to go back a bit, I might have been the only student of 60 that didn't get an internship in school. So it wasn't easy for me. I knew, and some of my peers knew, that I was good enough. I think, I don't know if I have an attitude. I think maybe I do. I'm just outspoken, and I was a bit of an older student then. And so I remember one class I said something like, all the students were speaking up, but I don't think they were saying what was really on their mind. And I put up my hand and said, well, I think what they're saying, but not saying is, isn't there a better way to teach us this? We don't want to spend X amount of time teaching this when none of us want to do it in our career. And then, which I think, so what ended up happening, me being that way, my peers helped me more in the long run. Like once you all get working, there's more of them than the teachers. And if you're not an idiot and you actually have potential and talent, they'll help you out in some ways, maybe more than the school. So I didn't get that internship, and I went back to driving a forklift, which was like humbling. And it was like a union job and all these like stinky men and, the smirks when I came back, like the fact that I left, they were not happy. Like looking like, I think I'm better than them. And then I come back and they were like, they didn't want me to come back. It was a union and they put me on garbage duty, which you'd maybe do for like 4 hours in a week. I did it every day for 8 hours for 3 months. So that was the punishment. And I remember saying to myself, if I can do this job, like I'll be the best garbage man ever when I get a job that I love. It's going to be so easy for me to work this hard. I just had some switch and I would just drive around thinking up ads all day on that forklift or dumping garbage. So once I got that job, my trajectory, I did move up fairly quickly. Within, you know, 4.5 years, there was talk of me being creative director at TBWA. I felt like, you know, I still at that time, I had more experience as a forklift driver than a creative. So I wanted some more mentorship and people to learn from. But I think if I'd stayed on that path and didn't burn out, it would have happened. And I don't know, I'd be somewhere very different today, but possibly. I don't know. Because to your point, Amelia, I like being on my own. I like being a bit more independent. I like the range of projects I work on and people I work with. The one thing I do miss, maybe, that working full time, you're part of a team and you're building something. So I miss that as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think when I started to crumble, it was weird because I'm a man and men don't have certain emotions. But yeah, I just started to break down. And I remember it was December and I had a stingy feeling in my eyes and I had walked into the office and I thought, oh, that's strange. And I thought maybe allergies, but it was December. So I have seasonal allergies, but I just wrote it off as like, whatever. My eyes were having a bad day. And it was probably a year later. I was on the couch watching Extreme Makeover Home Edition with my girlfriend at the time. And I just like the dam burst. And I really didn't even know why. And I think it didn't even happen. Like the move that bus part. I don't know if you guys have seen that show, move that bus. And then they reveal, I think it was actually during a commercial break, which is kind of ironic and fitting that I just started to break down. And so I went into this like den and just said I had to work, which was like totally believable. And so as my girlfriend went to sleep, I was sobbing and, you know, I don't remember crying. Like maybe I was like 6 years old. Like as a boy, I remember sitting in movie theaters, like, or I don't know if it was six, but not crying was such a victory if I didn't cry and felt like a man, which is so sad. So anyway, I guess all of these years, it just kind of burst. And then I didn't know what to make of it. I didn't actually feel sad. I think I was just exhausted. And then I went to work and I had that stingy feeling in my eyes. It was about a year later. And I was like, holy shit, that's what that was. And so, you know, I kept going back to work. And then I I ended up seeing a psychiatrist, and he was like, drew this little map, and he's like, burnout. And he's like, he drew a little point on the map. This is where most people are when they come see me. And then he like drew for like another 6 inches off the margins of the page. And he's like, this is where you are. And I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And so I went back to work. And then I just got to a point where I just knew I had to take a break and figure some things out. And I can't just blame advertising for that. I think burnout is quite common in the industry. I think it's because, one, we're expected to work so hard. I think we also enjoy it. It is fun. I think there's also never a right answer. You can just keep going and going and going. I think it's also our mind. And so our mind is preoccupied with things, and to like have peace and, you know, balance in life and to give your mind a rest. Like, we're just not taught that. And I think we should be in school. Like, this is the tool we're working with, is our brain. And we kind of neglect it. We talk about the creative process, and no career really talks enough about what's required from a mental or emotional standpoint. And I think we should be looking at our brain. I think we resist it because it's science and this is an art. But I think by looking at that and looking what our brains are capable of when we're most creative, how long our creative session should be. And I think we get a lot more out of them. How much creative energy do you have in a day? I think we could start measuring this stuff, and I think we'd all be better off for it. So that's actually the type of work I'm kind of into now, and starting to create content around that. But yeah, and I think, you know, life on its own, we have our own issues and things to overcome. So I think for me, it wasn't just advertising. It was kind of everything. And I took some time, and it was so awesome. It's like the best thing that happened to me. So it puts things in perspective. It's, you know, your own happiness is most important. And I don't think you can't get there year one. You kind of have to figure it out and fail and maybe cry while watching Extreme Makeover Home Edition. I don't know.
Well, it's a sad show, in your defense. I mean, it can get pretty rough.
You know, it might have just been the show all this time.
Right. My God, what did I just see?
I was happy.
What did the year off look like?
Well, funny, it was actually 3 months. I was exercise, walking, writing, thinking about what I wanted to do. I think it was just a pause. I was just hustling and working so hard to not be a like blue collar guy and to be somebody that I just didn't have any perspective at all. I was just, I remember having like ink marks on my bed sheets, cause I would have my sketchbook. Like, I just worked, and it wasn't pain. Like, I loved it. So I had 3 months to just kind of shut the brain off, and at no point in there was I like, fuck this, I'm going to, you know, whatever, drive a bus. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I wasn't in the best situations in some ways. I went back literally day one at the agency with my art director partner, and the creative director comes in and says, hey, we have a chance last minute to pitch on whatever. It was a Best Buy. Yeah. So it was 3 a.m. that I left the agency that night, day one back from like a stress leave. And I knew had I left earlier, it would have been frowned upon. My partner was so pissed off, and I just smiled. I was like, this is it. Like, if you want to do this, this is it. This is the job sometimes. I think, you know, agencies and creative directors have a responsibility though to know how hard they're pushing people and what they're asking. I think because anyone who's driven is going to push themselves anyway. Like,
yeah,
I don't know what junior is going home at 4:30 and 5. No, right. I don't think you can, right?
Right.
But what about you? Are you in agencies right now? Brian, you are, right?
I'm an intern.
So what are your hours like?
They're basically 9 to 5. Pandemic has thrown that all over the place. But it was generally not, I'm a morning person, so I would always be there first. And then, the agent pregnancy was typically like kind of a 10 to 6:30. So then I was, you know, also naturally obligated to stay late. So I've done that a lot. I'm in transition right now because I just got hired by a place in Anchorage. I thought I was going to drive through Canada, but passport timelines are screwing up that option. So got to find workarounds. When you were talking about what was leading up to burnout, I was and you said that when people were partying, you used that opportunity to work. I'm always really impressed when people find those vacuums, but that and I still am in that situation. But also, it told me that your burnout was not necessarily agency induced. It was like self-induced. You're just you just worked yourself to the bone, it sounds like.
I think they say, like, it's kind of said a lot, but you're motivated by the carrot or the stick. And I use the stick a lot, probably, in my life to that time. I'm fairly motivated now. We have a newborn baby at home, and we go in shifts, so from around 3 in the morning I'm on the clock if she gets up to feed, which she does every couple hours. But man, she would get up at 4 or 4:30. I would feed her, get her down, and just stay up and work. But because I was motivated, because there's things I want to do, and there's the creative work I have, but there's also the stuff I want to start creating for myself. I have actually... it's with an editor right now. It's a book on copywriting for copywriters.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I'll get that back. I have to make... it's fittingly called a self-help guide for copywriters. But it's a mixture of, you know, building craft, but also the mental side. So that includes getting through blocks you have and just tools and techniques. So I think, you know, to build more confident creatives, it is a mixture of those things. It is the craft that I think we cover in school. But then I think once we start our jobs, we get away from it. And I think I find a lot of that stuff is very foundational. Like, we need it, but I feel like we need to revisit it once we've been doing it through a different lens or perspective. Well, now here's how you can apply it, because I've been through it. And this tip we all read in book X, but here's how you actually do that. So that's what I try to do. And the back half of the book is all about more tips. Like, when I go into things like when you're most likely to come up with your best ideas, how long your creative session should be, how long your break should be, what you should do in those breaks if you really want to become an efficient creative. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, I think, like, the left brain, right brain thing. And I think we're hesitant to, like, put structure and creativity, or use techniques and formulas. I know it's not math, but I do think there's a lot of ways we can come up with ideas better and faster. I think other industries are always looking for efficiencies, and we don't. We just kind of do it the same old way. Like, creativity, there's just no way. You just have to show up, man. Yeah. I mean, to some degree, yeah, but it's actually...
also no.
But also no. And I think there are techniques and formulas you can use. If you're more creative, it's like putting the process on steroids. And if you're not, it's like super helpful. I think of the creativity, it can be so intimidating because we're all looking at the big idea. But when you look at where it starts, it's asking a very simple question. You have to start with surface level ideas. You can't start anywhere else. But we're so afraid because we want to get to the deeper insight. We won't say them out loud. But you start with the surface, and then you go one layer down. Oh, but that means this, and that means this, and that means this. But when we look at award annuals, we just see the piece, and we're like, oh my God, that's so great. And we're intimidated by it, maybe inspired. I think if we stopped and broke down the creative, you can, I don't know, I think it's important to ask, like, how may they have gotten there? And then you can repeat that. I think it's so important to know how you get somewhere too. And by having a process, by looking at it, if you broke down creativity and you, okay, I started here and then I went here and then I went here, and that's how we landed here. Because then you'd know how to do it. Hey, we should have another one of those conversations. We talked to the account guy who said X that led us here. but we just don't track anything. We're kind of idiots in that way, you know, like we leave that up to other people. Scheduling meetings, we don't even do. That's all up to other people. We just show up and in our t-shirts. And I think we have to lose that a little bit. I also think, I know I'm just going on a rant here, but I think the way the industry is changing, that it's so important. When I went client side and you're working for Lululemon, you have to produce stuff so much faster. And with social media, we have to, like, they need lots of quality content fast. And the old advertising agency model was a little bit of high quality content over like 3 to 6 months. And here's your 3 TV spots and your 2 radio spots and your billboards. And here's how it will be on social. That I met with a group of car dealers before pandemic fully kicked in. And I just said, you guys try and sell cars the way you have, you know, for the next 5 years. And I do ads the way I have for the next 5 years. None of us will be sitting in this boardroom. Okay. And I think for creatives, we do have to find a way to get there, get better faster, get to better faster. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Cause it's definitely a different animal. Just touching on the fact that you're client side now. I'm also client side. I work in a marketing department for Wonderlic. I mean, it's basically exactly what you're describing, where you need all kinds of content for social, for emails, for, I don't know, Google ads, like all this shit, right? Like in a week, like you're probably creating, you know, 10 times more than you would be if you were agency side, just because you're working with one client. Yeah. And I think that is somewhat where I would experience some burnout, is that it's really difficult not to be able to jump from one thing to another and say, like, when you're finished with client A, okay, I have another project or something for client B, and I can just like shift gears and give myself some time to think. Right. Whereas, you know, working for an agency, you have the opportunity to do that. So I definitely can appreciate, the burnout aspect of both.
But I think the more we do it, it's just like your podcast. Mm-hmm. To start out, it's going to take longer to do one. Maybe it even takes longer to figure out what you're going to talk about or what the point is. But the more you do it, every week you're going to come up with angles and ideas, and it's just going to get so much faster. I think the more you work on a brand, that can happen. I know some of the bigger agencies and whatever, you'll work on Nissan. That's it for 5 years. I could never do that, but I know lots of people do. I have buddies who do it. But I think that's kind of the key. I think it's also, when you look at social media, it's breaking it down for brands. Maybe it's their values and how they come to life. You create these content buckets. So they're defined. And once they're defined, you know, it's already there. So you'll see something in the world. You'll have an idea and you just put it in that bucket. Mm-hmm. I think it can actually help us get there faster.
Totally. Your conscious mind can use those structured things made up. And then if you, like you said, if you've been on a similar brand for a long time, you've also got your subconscious, working for you. I think. So you'll be out in the world and you'll be like, boom, right there. That connects the thing from the meeting last week. We got this.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it just boils down to use the tools you're given, and anything can be a tool.
Yes, totally.
I'm excited for your book. I love different perspectives on the approach to problem solving and being efficient about it, like you were talking about. One of the only reason I knew Rethink when you mentioned them was because I heard one of their founders interviewed on It's Only Fucking Advertising. Have you listened to that one at all?
Yeah. I've listened to that episode, yeah.
Yeah. And this was, you know, a long time ago. I think probably before I even got the internship. So, the fact that he was like, if you're here at 6 PM, 7 PM, we want to know what you did wrong. That was interesting to me because even outside of the creative sphere, I've definitely seen people that were working for work's sake and not to necessarily improve things, you know?
I think that it's funny in an ad agency. I mean, when I started and I didn't have a partner and I felt like I had a lot to prove, I didn't have a hard time working. I remember there was a phone right back when you didn't have you know, we had cell phones, but there was like a phone on my desk. I didn't touch it for a week. And there was a window. I hardly looked at it. Like, I didn't feel I could. I'm like, I just had to work. Oh, I lost my train of thought. Shit, we have to cut this part out.
Well, oh yeah, no, you should know we don't cut anything.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
okay,
all of the dead air we leave in for exactly as long as it was.
You just are doing this to humiliate people?
No, it's actually to train young creatives to get used to the awkward pauses that are going to happen in their brainstorming nice. Sessions.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Especially via Zoom.
I got it. Let's splice this together. Like when I started, all I did was work in a day. And then once you get comfortable, you know, I rock in at 9:30 with a coffee and small talk with your art director, anyone else who walks by, mm-hmm. work for an hour. And it takes, I read somewhere recently, it takes about 25 minutes to you're fully into selling. So, you know, if you're looking at your phone in that time, even you're not heading in the right direction.
Let's say that clock, right?
Yeah. Well, let's say you go for an hour, even focus time, and you have a meeting for an hour. Now it's noon. Then you go for lunch. I don't know. What did you eat for lunch? So you're crashing. You maybe work for 45 minutes and then you got to get a coffee and a cookie or whatever it is to get a little boost. And then it's 3 o'clock and you have another meeting. And then it's 4 o'clock. Like, yeah, you've worked for 2 hours. How much of that time was like, that's why we got to work at night. Mm-hmm. That's why we have to work on the weekend. Right. I think I just wasn't super productive with my time. I think because our job is fun and we're talking about creative, that we think part of our job is kicking our feet up and talking about movies. And I think we go too far with that. I think if we were really serious about being efficient and productive, like I think it was Chris Staples on that podcast you listened to, you know, but we're not providing those tools for creatives. If we laid it out for them, like I just did, and this is how you're spending your day, and said, you know what, you're actually most creative from 7 a.m. to 9, or so don't come in. If you're not coming in until 9:30, like just get up, even if you're tired, especially if you have a big presentation or you're feeling blocked or feeling like you're not going to get there, get up early and be tired. Grab a coffee, work for 2 hours. You'll feel like you're ahead of things instead of chasing the day. And you can come in and kick your feet up and chat. Mm-hmm. But if you're actually aware of your schedule, maybe you just tell the account team, you know what, I'm really productive from 10 to 11:30. No meetings. And if you're really serious and you have a busy afternoon and you know you have to pump some stuff out and be creative, don't eat something massive for lunch. Mm-hmm. Like it will help. But we just kind of run on autopilot. And I think all of these things, I don't think we have to like be creative robots. I think it's just important to know what impacts our body and our energy level and our brain. And I don't think we know enough about it, which is kind of surprising to me given that creativity is our bread and butter. Mm-hmm. I don't know for how long, but this is really what I want to start focusing on and sharing and creating content. I'm just getting started, but it's going to be my focus to, I think, help creatives be more efficient and happier. And you know, when we have time off, because we're more efficient at work, we can see friends, go on dates, take weekends off. Like, and I mean, lots of studies will show that you have to step away from things too.
Right.
As part of the creative process.
Well, and it's really interesting too that you're bringing up, you mentioned earlier that maybe people don't put as much stock into this because it's science and not creative. Yeah. And I want to point out too that someone who's not in this industry would look at what we do and say, oh my God, you get to be creative all day. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's like, it sounds fun, right? And yeah. And that I think is a stigma that could rub off on us as well and say, oh, well, you know what? You're right. I am constantly thinking about really weird, interesting shit. Like yeah. I get to make things. And for other people, that would be a break, you know, mm-hmm. to get to make something. Yes. So I think we don't really take much stock into how powerful our brains really do have to be to come up yeah. with this stuff all the time. Well, I think you do need a break.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think that's why, to your point, and this is, I'm kind of taking this somewhere else, but why creatives hate brainstorm sessions. I hate them. Yeah. And it's because for everyone else, it's fun and it's a break. But for us, it's actually taking us away from our work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
we now have to, it's almost like dance monkey too. There's some pressure on you because you're the only one who actually does it for a living, but that's not actually how we work with an audience. And then you have other people coming up with shitty ideas and you're the only creative. And are you supposed to speak up and creative direct 10 other people who are getting excited about a lame idea? I don't think so. So I know I try and steer clear of most of those meetings. I mean, if I'm working with other creatives, that's one thing. But yeah. It can be useful. I just think you have to structure them. Like if there's something called question storming, which I find probably more helpful. It's just like ask all the interesting questions and then I'll go with my creative team and answer those questions and explore them. And that will stimulate things. I think as creatives too, I think it's okay in those situations to say, I'll be a fly on the wall because you're just absorbing and taking notes and you might get ideas. Unless of course you're doing it with other creatives, but if you're doing it, if you're the only creative in the room, it's like, it can be kind of awkward and I don't know. I hate it.
Yeah. All right.
For me, my foray into advertising, first of all, I didn't know you could be a creative, you know, that was an option as I was growing up. Otherwise I might've went towards it earlier, but I've been a singer songwriter for my whole adult life. And since I was a teenager and I'm kind of okay with the sleeping on floors and the roughing it. That comes with it. But I am from almost all poverty, borderline poverty, just people barely making it even now, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Very few college graduates and stuff in my family. And so part of my motivation is to just distance that for if I have kids, to distance them from it. Not the people, but just the struggle and the things that come along with it. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the blue collarism of the forklift job and how you were kind of leaning into it to ultimately get away from it. And I just wonder how much of that is rooted in your, childhood and family.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of this, it's not like top of mind, but I think there was probably still deal with it. A sense of like not being enough or being less than, probably more importantly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the bigger reason why I push myself so hard. And then there's nothing that can take that away in an advertising. No awards. I remember it's probably the last award show I was at. I'm going to brag a little bit here, but the last 2 years, and there's this year in Vancouver, so there's a lot of good agencies, Rethink, DDB at the time, like top level creatives internationally. The last 2 years, I won best of show the last 2 years in a row that I worked for ad agencies. Nice. And so I won other awards that night, but that's the big one. And I was standing there with actually Ian Graves, who is Chris Staples' partner at Rethink. And this art director came by and he said, "Hey, congrats." And I said, "For what?" And I wasn't joking. And he said, "Dude, for the stuff you want." And I was like, I said, "Oh yeah." Like, and he said, I hate you, because he was so motivated to like win those. And I think, you know, I realized that I was kind of burnt then. I remember at that show particularly, it was like kind of the last one, but it wasn't enough to take that away. It would have been like, what's next? And I can so relate to what you're saying. But yeah, you just have to. And now I have kids, and so I can really relate to that. And even like my last name, it was like, oh, I'm not proud of that, because I would associate it with maybe my family and background and some of the struggles. But yeah, man, it's like, it takes time, but it's so awesome once you grow out of that. And you can't, you just have to accept who you are too. And a lot of like your wonderful qualities came from that too. And I know for me, like my older brother's so creative. One was into music, other one into acting. The things I was watching and exposed to on TV, my older brother had a camera and was always filming things. And they were so creative. I mean, I don't think either of them graduated high school. One later went back and got his GED. Of the five kids in my family, I was the only one to graduate high school in a regular curriculum. Obviously I was like, fuck, I got to do something. And that was also, I think what comes with that is when you are accomplishing things, I was a good athlete too. So I was winning awards in college as an athlete, but I could never come home with a trophy or anything like that. I mean, those were just, I didn't want my siblings to feel bad, or I felt it was something strange there where I felt like I couldn't, if I struggled, I had more in common with them and that's how we connected, which doesn't contribute to you feeling good about yourself. You just continue to like identify with that. But I think you just have to lead I had to make a point at a certain time to not connect that way. And I think a lot of people do, even look in agencies and people chatting by the water cooler aren't chatting about how great Susie is. They're like, what a fucking idiot. See what she did. And a lot of us do connect. I think even early relationships and romantic relationships start not because of the good things you have in common. It's like, yeah, we both hate this and we both hate Tammy. Let's get married. Fucking Tammy.
We'll invite Tammy. let's invite Tammy, but give her the wrong address.
Yes. We should just let her know, but we'll let her know right before it happens because she'll probably already have plans.
Oh yes, she will.
That's why we called her Planny back then.
Diabolical. <Yeah. laughs>
Man, I related to so much of that. I have constantly found myself dumbing down my conversation, or maybe not even dumbing down it, but emotionally as well as intellectually, yeah, just to hang with the boys from my hometown or my uncle or something, you know,
yeah,
folks from my family. Cause there is, you are protective of where you come from, you know? And so you definitely don't want to be a pain point.
No, but I think people also use it as an excuse to why to not reach your potential.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's hard, man. I've had chats, you know, with my parents, even like, I don't want to connect like X anymore. If that's how you want to continue to do it, then we're not doing it, which is like really hard. But I think, you know, that was the beauty of kind of burning out and being sad guy for a little bit. unfortunately, it was just like a period of time in my life, but I realized just how fragile, and I didn't think I was, because I guess I suppressed a lot, but I was like, you know, a good athlete. I was now having success in my career, and just kind of hold your head high. And like, I was different. I was kind of a success for where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't obviously have all the tools, and I suppressed a lot, and then, you know, it caught up with me. But I think it showed me I can shape how I connect with people. And yeah, I was probably really suffering. I probably connected to the negative quite a bit. I had someone tell me once, I think of multiple people, two people I can think of, that I was negative, and I was so surprised. And one person told me after, it was like, it was the person I was with when I burnt out. She said, I didn't notice it because you were funny and joked around a lot. You kind of masked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I fooled myself with that too. Yeah.
I've definitely been in one of my last major relationships. She would call me out for joking instead of getting real or whatever. And I was always so surprised that it affected her or came off as negative, like you were saying.
Which is, I'll just tie it back to advertising. And it's why, like, maybe you do it too, is try and be funny. Like, to not be a one-trick writer is important, I think, to experiment with different emotions, to do things that, I think it's just going for like a clever, interesting insight. And if it comes out funny, great, but start with that insight. I think I gravitated towards humor. I think a lot of people do. And you will see a lot of people, comedians, so many of them struggle with depression and things like that. That's why they gravitate towards it. So I mean, think whether, you know, whatever your background is, I think when you're creative, I think it's important to not be a one-trick writer. It opens things up in yourself and opportunities other brands and, you know, this creative field. It's so easy to be typecast. You think of directors. Oh, he shot a car commercial. Let's hire that guy. How could he possibly shoot these pants? So I think it's important to kind of explore a range. For
that's
sure.
That's kind of a that was just fascinating to me how it, you know, it kind of is okay to maybe use a defense mechanism and the talent therein to get you into a field such as this. You know, you mm-hmm. grew up, you had to be funny, so now you're a writer. But to not like you said, typecast yourself, stay in there. It's, you know, you definitely want to keep growing.
It goes to quite a high level. Like, just speaking of directors, brands won't want to take a risk on someone who's only done, you know, someone cried in that ad. There's no way she could do funny.
Yeah.
But I think I heard there's another podcast, one of your competitors. It's called Talking to Ourselves.
Good podcast.
Yeah. Have you listened to that at all?
What is it?
Talking to Ourselves.
No.
Okay. Yeah. You can edit this out because it's your competition. But
hey, the podcast universe is just like the real universe, and it's constantly expanding. There's room for all of us.
There's enough for everyone.
Amid but stop Farhani, plugging them.
Chief Creative Officer of Momentum. We'll put a list of his episodes in the show notes.
Let's just call them the bad podcast.
Yeah.
The other bad podcast.
Really bad. But he was saying, he used some analogy of like it was like a sporting team. And he said, so let's say you're shooting a car commercial. And you look for someone who has experience in a car commercial. He says, well, let's say you had like a pickup basketball game and you're looking for a center. But LeBron James is available. He said, I'll play for your team. You're like, no, we're looking for a center. I'm sorry. You know, I think you take the best person available. And I think we often don't. We just typecast, and I think it's limited. And I think we do that within ourselves too, always going down the same paths. And, and that's where I think some formula and structure to creativity is good, to force yourself at a certain point instead of just winging it, to consciously explore a different emotion, a different tone in your writing and thinking.
But that to me is such an ironic statement to getting typecast as a creative, because traditionally this industry attracts all kinds of people, you know, that don't really have a traditional career trajectory. You know what I mean? Like you know, we're the people who just really didn't have any interest in doing anything else. Our brains don't work in order to do anything else. You know what I mean? Cause we're just weird as shit.
Yes.
You know?
Totally.
That's so funny that within our industry, there are like the stereotypical creatives.
There are so many contradictions in this creative industry, but I think it's because we're doing it for brands and they have certain structures in place. And then there's a bunch of us in an ad agency or wherever you work. There's processes in place. It's not all about creative. And that's the one thing you see when you're working in-house or client side, as we call it, and working with an agency, which I love those calls, by the way, being client side and meeting with agency people, creatives. Oh, I felt for them. I could just sense some of the tension and nervousness on the other side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they've been thinking about a project for 2 to 3 weeks every day, but we haven't been at all. And they think it's the most important thing. And to some degree, it is like a fun break for clients, creative. But a lot of times, they're thinking about other things. And it's just not everything. And in our world, man, we get so spoiled. Because in our agencies, it is king. It runs everything in most agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perspective you get from working in-house, too, is I think we get so self-involved. We lack like an awareness, the self-awareness. And a lot of brands do. I think you'll see a lot of the work that came out through the pandemic lacked self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, so I'll find like in ad agencies, we come up with the best creative idea, but a lot of times we just get so involved in the creative. You're really not thinking about the business and how it grows the business.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think I've made that mistake too. And I think in this industry, if we swap the word a brand for business, even 30% of the time, we would all have a lot more money.
Yeah. Well, and that's the Ben Kay, when we talked to him, he brought up the same kind of point and attributed it back to ad award shows and mm-hmm. and what it means to make work that's going to work versus work that's going to win you an ad or an Addy, you know, or some sort of award in that category. And what is the balance there?
Yeah. Well, I think the responsibility falls on award shows. Mm-hmm. and the criteria for entry, I think falls on ad agencies as well, because for me, man, if it wasn't for award shows, man, my salary rose pretty quickly. I think a lot of those ads help businesses a lick. Some of them, honestly, two of the campaigns were like ideas I had in my school portfolio that they said, hey, let's just get a client. They weren't even like big clients. And they said, let's just get someone. And they slapped the, you know, my creative slap their logo on it and the tagline I wrote, got it shot, entered it into award shows, and it went in decent shows. But I mean, that's generally frowned upon. There should be certain criteria. And in Vancouver, especially, because they would keep like points, you would get points as creatives and they would rate you based on the amount of awards you won. So there'd be a ranking for art directors, copywriters, creative directors. So there's like incentive. You have to like, let's win awards. Let's put that thing. Oh yeah. I just had an idea for this dog walker. Let's do it. That's funny. And we'd get some junior account person to contact, find us a client that will run this. We would contact media suppliers because we had free media space. They would slap it in. It would run once. It would win awards. We would get points. We would make more money. Well, it's so individualistic. And I think that also it like separates within an agency too, by giving creatives too much, I don't want to say like power, respect, it really skews things. And I think it's actually a detriment. And so like to come full circle, I think it's on award shows to have the certain criteria and then agencies to just have integrity about what they're doing. And that energy should be put towards your own clients. And if you can't get your own clients to do great, the work you want to do, you probably have the wrong ones. So there's some other problem going on with how you get business and the people, or it's the people you've hired to do the work. Something's not aligned.
Right.
Yeah, I struggle with them because on one hand, they really help me. And if I'm not doing super fun work for my clients, it was great to have some fun stuff made. But at the end of the day, it's our job to help people sell stuffs.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Make that money. Stuffs.
Yeah. Make money, make people money, make other people money. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Not for us.
Yeah. Capitalism, just like anybody, just, you know, yeah. We support it.
Yes, we love it. That was like, I'll go back. I don't want to talk too much unless you want to, but we don't have
rant
to.
Away.
Yeah, that's what I can do. I thought I wouldn't have anything to say. Now you're going to have to put some more coins in the Zoom box.
The Zoom box.
It must be just like our faces or something. That's typically how our interviews go.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I think that's like people just like to talk about themselves.
There you go. Well, especially ad people. So we have not, we have no shortage of people who want to be on our podcast.
I did read someone posted something recently about, you know, connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And it is just to ask them about themselves, which is kind of sad, but I guess we're all that way.
Is it sad that that is the factor that we have to be told
good point
if you want someone's interest, be interested first.
Yeah. 100%.
I'm interested. We're interested. Yes.
Someone said that to me, you know, once. It was like, it was life changing. It says, do you want to spend your life being interesting or interested? And she said, I think the latter is kind of would provide more value in life. It was like, yeah, stop me. Anyway, let me talk some more. I don't know where we were. Nothing about the pandemic, but I don't know what about it. It's over now, isn't it?
Yeah, no.
Oh my gosh. No.
It's not over, but we've added to it. It's gotten like another level with all the rioting that's happening and just, yeah. Which, for the record, I agree with the message. This podcast supports Black Lives Matter. Just outright, we want to say that.
Yes,
totally.
But yeah, I mean, with the pandemic and everything else happening, it's just been crazy.
It really, yes. it's just all in all, it's just a very apocalyptic view.
It is.
I mean, if you just like caught a couple of scenes of today from any other point in time, you'd be like, wow, that's some interesting shit is going on.
It really puts things in perspective. And actually, that's, I know what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I was going back to the beginning of the pandemic. It kind of puts things in perspective. And I think actually I started our chat this way. It's like what we do is really, I don't say it's not important, like it is, but things do get put into perspective. And, you know, talking about brands' responsibility during the, like that first week, people weren't buying shoes and stuff. They were buying food and oddly like toilet paper or whatever.
All of it.
I had thought it was like there was panic shopping, and then idiots like us were like panic advertising or brands. It was just so stupid. But over time, people realize they have enough toilet paper, and brands realize their place in all of this too. And I think as much as it's, I want to like throw darts at some of them, and some of the work made me angry, you got to have some compassion too. But yeah, a lot of, and I think it does reveal some of the problems, and it's going back to something else I said, and that we don't know how to produce good work fast. It was all the same. And for brands, I think certain brands, if you're in touch with your values, it's a lot easier. Right. And you know who you are, because then you can just be yourself through whatever's happening in the world.
Yeah.
But if you're not, you do shit like separating your logo and stuff, which is so meaningless and selfish. I think we're like so hardwired to look for opportunity as creatives, even when, like, you know, this fucking riots or this little virus cruising around, like, oh, how can we win an award? That's like so stupid.
This isn't exactly in response to that point, but the default as brands is mostly risk aversion, which mm-hmm. just makes the variety that you're going to get in these situations, not, you know, pretty bleak.
Yes, for sure. I mean, that's what makes most work lame at the best of times.
Right. Right. It's people being scared to take risks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to, like, you know, I wrote about this last week. There's, you find the insights first and then you find the ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the best insights are like putting a stake in the ground. They are about something specific. They're not generic. And you know, when you're concepting and coming up with ideas and you got to present, you have your ideas on the wall and you have different routes and campaigns. If you could easily take one and say, hey, let's move this one over here and this one over here, they're not clearly defined enough. Like, and you know, talking about like risk aversion, that means that you're not risky enough. You're not pushing things far enough. Then if you have three of those, your client's really going to have to choose something to say something. But a lot of times our work isn't, it's just kind of soft, or it's pushing things a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, but hey, we can move this one here and that one here. And it's really, if we write a generic tagline, they all fit together. Let's use them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it also begs the question too, at what point does it stop becoming a brand's responsibility to say anything, or at least acknowledge that there is a crisis, but also acknowledge that your brand can't help you or do anything? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, you know, like, it just, cause that's a lot of what I noticed when everyone was, you know, sending all these messages, like, we stand together, we're in this together. And the only thing it was doing was reminding me of that one subscription that apparently I still had from 3 years ago,
you
know, like, and that doesn't do anything for me.
Are you sure you wish to unsubscribe?
Yeah, right. Just, I didn't even
realize. I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if anything, that's a detriment to your brand than anything else.
Well, that's, you know, that's the lacking self-awareness bit. You think you're that important, but you're really not. I think just like behavior as a human, one of the ways to evaluate your behavior is if everyone else was doing this, would it be okay? Like most brands wouldn't if they actually thought, okay, what if every list or whatever they subscribe to messages them saying something like this? Are they going to do it? Probably.
Right.
Then it's just wallpaper. That's why I think if you have values, and I'll talk about Lululemon quickly, but they did, because they do have strong values. They don't always like bring them to life in the best way, and they struggle to do that like all brands.
Mm-hmm.
But man, they know what they're about. And as soon as this hit, they had like endorphins instead of endorphins, endorphins. And it was workouts you could do at home. They were doing free meditations, yoga classes, HIIT classes, providing content. That was like what they loved. It was like they really came to life because they knew who they were. I think brands who don't really struggle. But yeah, I think it was the panic advertising that if they waited a week, they would have saw that, hey, it's okay. Maybe we just don't run this. Maybe we don't say anything, but we all, oh, we have to say something. Because I think people just thought, you know, this was it for all of us. But now it's not. And things are, you know, slowly coming back and hopefully continue to safely.
I had just started a ClassPass subscription before COVID got to the States. And it was one of those things where it was free, and then I forgot to cancel it. So now I'm paying for it. So I might as well see the next month out. And maybe they did some tone deaf advertising. I didn't like scour the internet or even kind of look for it. But I know that they emailed me and they were just like, hey, we know you can't go to any of these places. We're going to go ahead and pause everyone's, auto drafts of their subscriptions. And, you can start it back whenever you want. Like it was relevant. They weren't trying to save the world or tell me that they were thinking about me at night. Mm-hmm. You know, they just did something utilitarian and moved on. And I appreciated that a lot.
Brands always talk about like being a person and not sounding like a corporation. Mm-hmm. But man, it's hard for them to do that. And I don't know why they can't just swap and say, what if I was on the receiving end of this? How would I feel?
Yeah.
Like we are talking to ourselves. We are talking to like our neighbors, our friends, other humans. Like, oh man, it just blows my mind with how we communicate to people or what brands think they need to say, or we need to get out there. Like it's I don't know, stupid, gross.
So forgive the political parallel. If it makes anyone uncomfortable, but I feel like it's kind of funny that all this stuff is happening at the same time.
Mm.
Brands should be risky. They should risk slipping a little, looking awkward, sounding stupid, just like white people should, to call out other white people or try to speak out against all the injustices that we are seeing, you know, continue for decades and decades and decades. Mm-hmm. Like it's now kind of on us to just risk sounding stupid and white and corny and what
I think so too.
Risk it, try it. You got to say something. You can't, we can't just keep the status quo going and it's not, and you know, I know it's already a slogan, but the silence is, you know, it's definitely supportive of the
violence. I know it has for me, and I hope it does for other people to see how, look and see how you're playing a role in this and causing it. And I think what happens is, I was thinking about this the other day, like the word racist, it's like, you just think of a monster. And so to call someone a racist, it's like, they just get defensive and don't look any further than that. But I think there's probably in our subconscious, you know, there's the teacher who's wonderful and beautiful and sweet and white, who maybe, I don't know, what if 90% of the time she chose the cute little white girl with her hand up instead of the cute little black girl?
Right. I'm sending you like 100% emojis right now. This,
yeah.
because racism is, you know, it's like sexuality. It's a spectrum. No, you're not definitely a racist or definitely not a racist.
Yeah.
It just affects
in
different ways.
I feel like there has to be another term. It's like that teacher's a contributor, you know, she's not a racist. 'Cause then how are we all contributing?
Yeah.
Like I'm racist. Sure I am. Yeah, race-ish.
Ish. Ish.
Yeah, I'm a little. Or maybe it is saying, because people would never say, if I had like a one of those tendencies, if I'm like a 2 out of 100, like, am I going to say I'm a racist? Does that help? And I don't know how I am. Like, I just don't know. I think maybe for a lot of people that won't even look at that term, mm-hmm. there's maybe something else for them to look at. Or is it like questions? I don't know who's the Black Lives Matter movement. Is it, if you're not racist, your best friend is a racist. What if your son or daughter married a Black boy or girl? Do you feel anything there? It's like drilling down. Where do you feel something? Where are you? And why? And dig into that. Because it's obviously there. I don't know. I don't understand it. And Canada is a little different, especially Vancouver. Culturally, ethnically, it's just so hard for me to understand what's happening in the States.
I think not only is it systemic oppression, but it's also systemic ignorance that's been perpetuated by years and years and years and years of a government working a certain way, of social systems working a certain way. And, you know, for the most part, people aren't overtly aware, because the people that have been oppressed to the point where they don't feel like they can say anything anymore. Right. And I would say that these riots that are happening now are bringing awareness finally in a strong united voice to say, okay, we're done. We're done with this. You know, we want you to hear us at this point. Like, it feels like right before a November election, right before, you know, the end of tyranny of 4 years. I mean, just like, come on, you know, just it all comes to a head at this point.
Well, I'm thinking like Brian talking about those feelings of less than, and we all do in our own way. Mm-hmm. Imagine if the world also saw you as less than.
Right.
Like, man. And then on top of that, your brother or your father or your son is killed.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I would, there's no limit to what I would do and how I would respond.
Yeah. And
response is one thing though, but I mean, it's also the feeling of just being broken and understanding that your response, no matter what it is still going to be viewed as less than because you reacted in anger or you reacted in a certain way that just wasn't flattering to your character at that point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, we're all three white people here. We can't sit here and say that we understand anything about what, you know, people of color are going through, but I think the best thing we can do is say, you know, we have had ignorance and we see what it's doing and we want it to change.
Yes. I think you're right. We can't, but I think maybe now more clearly than ever, louder than ever, it's like we have a responsibility to dig, to learn more, to empathize more, to see ourselves in it.
Black people, at least and especially in America, are reminded of their race and what that means systemically on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Just like what you're saying, we have to start daily asking ourselves, what does it mean to be white? What are we given, you know, and what are we contributing to daily instead of just, you know, business as usual?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can take that a step further and even say, what does it mean to be a creative at this point? I mean, just to draw it back into advertising and branding, what can we do as people who are in charge of the face of branding? What can we do it for suggestion? Or like, what can we do to really make it understood, like as people who have a larger platform than others do, how can we help?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is where, you know, a brand willing to take a risk can play such a huge part. Like we spoke about this a little bit with Samantha Geloso, but the agency of record days kind of fading. Mm-hmm. So you know, that takes a little bit of maybe not power isn't the word, but like the idea that creatives are going to push their brands is not as likely because folks got to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think advertising and branding, it's also gender is a whole other thing we could talk about, and gender equality in advertising, but also in media and how both men and women are portrayed. And then race is a whole other thing. I think there's a lot of responsibility on us. And I know for myself, I caught myself whenever I would write radio, it would be white guys. I don't know if they're white guys to the radio, but but they were men. Mm-hmm. Men had the jokes, men had the this. And I had to consciously at one point stop once I saw the pattern. And notice I'm in recording studios with men who are men behind the microphones and the dials, and I'm a man and guys behind the microphones. Maybe there was a woman who came in and did the announcer bit. And then I had times early in my career where you have clients requesting, well, why don't we just get hot chicks and whatever. You're like, people say, but say that out loud. I'm just like, holy shit, no.
Right.
And then I noticed too, you'd at times have, I don't know if you can relate to this at all, Amelia, but there would be like a young female writer and surrounded by men. And the type of stuff that she would write would be stuff they would laugh at, but there's no way she would be proud of it. It was just surrounded by boys using boy humor to like connect and relate and be part of the boys. Mm-hmm. But I stopped her once and just said, hey, do you like this? Because I don't. and I think it stopped. But yeah.
It's definitely hard to not write what you know. Mm-hmm. I would say that in defense of writing something that comes out eventually as stereotypical, just because mm-hmm. you can't write about something you don't have experience with. Mm-hmm. But then that comes to, okay, so if I don't have this experience, how can I get it? Or how can I collaborate with other people who are going to help me see it? Mm-hmm. And that's the way. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I work best when I'm collaborating with people because there are things that I just don't understand, or there are just things that I can't bring to the table. So how can I make mm-hmm. my work better other than, you know, being connected with either social media or collaborating or watching a ton of movies and TV and, you know, just like being connected.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that lack of conversation, I think, is what allows these marginalizations to stay so subversive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're in our collective or individual bubbles maybe not pushing the envelope. And this was better in my head a couple of minutes ago. But one of my dear friends is a soccer coach. So that's mostly male peers that she's got. And she was telling me about how when she goes to these kind of week-long coach summit things. I don't know anything about the industry, so I'm not positive what it was. But and they break off into groups, and they need someone to write. They go, oh, I bet you have pretty handwriting, the only girl in the room. Mm-hmm. And so she becomes the scribe. She's having less of a conversation because she's writing things down. And you know, if you want to call people on it, there's a chance, and I don't think it's right, but they're gonna bristle because it's not this overt damn women kind of thing. It's just subversive contribution to the status quo.
Yeah, assumptions kill me. I'm sorry, we have to cut this because we have less than a minute, and I also I just told my boss that I can't talk right now, so I need to call him back. So Dan, thank you so much for your time. This has been such a pleasure, and we've learned a lot from you.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for letting me talk about myself.
Man,
I'm just kidding.
This feels totally
honestly,
not
thank
done.
Thank you guys.
Also, thanks for joining us. We would love to pick this back up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we'll keep you updated with when we publish.
Yes, we have to wrap up gender equality.
We're going to solve it. We're going to solve it.
Let's compare notes. Okay. Thank you so much. And good job and congrats and keep going.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great day, man.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.